We are live. We live. Happy whiskey Saturday night, gentlemen. How are we?
We are good.
It's a saucy Saturday.
It's a steamy Saturday here in Los Angeles. It's very humid.
You know what? It was a stormy one here. Thunder, lightning, the whole bit. Tons of rain, too.
Hello. Hello. Well, we are live again on Booze Dancing Entertainment Network with another live stream, What We Watch When We Drink episode to be turned into a podcast at a future date. We don't do Saturday Night Live.
We haven't in a long time.
We have not. We have, but not in a long time. This is we were kicked off the show back in the 70s. Chevy kicked us off and never came back. Chevy started doing too much cocaine and we just couldn't, we wouldn't be his mule.
Or as we like to say, cocaina.
And this is the reason that we went off the National Broadcasting Corporation's family of networks.
This is not Narcos. This is What We Watch When We Drink.
Yeah.
Watch When We Drink. So we are live, by the way, we are live on all kinds of places. Our website, boozedancing.com, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn, where else? That's probably it.
I think that's it. I think that's enough.
That's enough. So you want to roll the intro?
I will. I'm going to do it.
Bring in our guest.
I'm going to do it right now. Ready?
Do it now. Go for it.
Do it.
Welcome to What We Watch When We Drink, a Booze Dancing Entertainment Network podcast featuring lively discussions about movies, TV shows, and anything else that we're watching while we drink our favorite boozy beverages. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
And we'd love to hear from you tonight because you can always put comments in the chat and all those different social media streaming places, YouTube, and just put some comments in. We'll be happy to respond to you and ask questions. And yeah, there you go. And definitely rate us on your podcast forum when you get a chance. Booze Dancing, Entertainment Network, What We Watch When We Drink. And we have a very special guest tonight. And we met this gentleman, what? And you and I met him
back in June at Kiddish Fest.
We were lucky to meet Josh Mann from the First Cut Barrel Company. And we are welcoming Josh to our program. Hi, Josh.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Very excited to be here. Thanks.
Yeah. And Josh, where are you right now?
I am currently in beautiful Stamford, Connecticut at First Cut Barrel Company, our brand new first-class distillery here in Stamford.
Well, thanks for coming on. We are going to be talking to Josh tonight, and he was nice enough to send us some samples of some whiskeys that he is producing. And we're going to be also talking about a movie that we've all seen and I think probably all liked, A Fish Called Wanda. We'll get to that shortly. First, we want to find out from Josh, what's First Barrel Cut all about? First Barrel Company all about?
First Cut Barrel Company.
First Cut Barrel Company.
Yeah, so we kind of have a unique concept. Most distilleries, they are either distilling or they're sourcing product from other distilleries, and they're putting out a brand that they're investing in, and they're trying to build brand recognition and marketing around their brand and all these kinds of things. We're kind of taking an opposite approach. Whereas other distilleries are looking for lots of the same in order to create consistency in product, we're doing something different. We're looking for as wide a variety as possible. And everything ultimately is for our client. So we're not putting out anything under our own First Cut brand. Everything is for our individual client on a per barrel or per small batch basis. Whether that's whiskey clubs, individual private enthusiasts or investors, collectors, any kind of fraternal groups, corporate gifts, that kind of thing. And it's been really exciting. We right here on the East Coast, there's nobody else. I don't even know really anybody else in the country that's actually allowing people to forget about just buying your own single barrel. But we actually let you pick out each component from mash bill to barrel size to entry proof to char level, every piece. And not only that, you get to actually come in and fill the barrel yourself. You could do new fill, or we could end up sourcing barrels from other amazing distilleries around the world. And after that, the client gets to pick their glass bottle style, gets to design their label. Everything gets TTB approved by the government. The client chooses the closure, whether it's wax or a pull tab or something. We produce the whole thing, make it look beautiful, and get it to the client. And it's been a lot of fun. We've been in business now. The process has been about a year with all the regulations and renovations and everything like that. But we've really been open for business about a little over 6 weeks, and we've got a phenomenal response. It's really been unbelievable. Very exciting for us.
There's a million questions, but let's step back a little bit. So how did you get into whiskey yourself? What was your introduction to the spirit?
It's kind of funny. I really never drank liquor, even in college. It was always beer. I went to college in Pittsburgh, and it's, very much a Yingling kind of town, or at least it was back then. And
probably still is.
Yeah. And that's not a bad thing, but, it definitely wasn't whiskey. I ended up moving to Boston. Ultimately, I'm from New York, but I moved to Boston. I met my wife. We got married in Boston, and she was in some local liquor store buying a bottle of wine for something, and they somehow convinced her to enter a rare whiskey raffle. This is probably, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago, not maybe 8 years maybe. And she did it. She didn't know anything about whiskey, but she did it to support the charity. And then one day she gets a call from the retailer. They pulled my name. She put my name in the thing. And they gave us a list of whiskeys to choose from. They said, pick whichever you want. This is the fluff. We're going to pick it up. So I'm looking at this list, and I don't know. I don't recognize any of the names. All I was familiar with, Wild Turkey, Jack Daniels, that was pretty much it. So I started doing a little research, and I really kind of just started at that rabbit hole. I got a little interested. That first bottle ended up being a Weller 12-year. And even then, I had no idea what I was holding. And I ended up opening it. I tried it. And I was like, oh, this is pretty good. I kind of see what all this excitement is about. And that's really how it all got started. And from there, it was all downhill. Between collecting and samples, and it's been the biggest blessing in my life. I've met so many great friends. Oh, did I freeze?
Nope, you're good.
For a second, but we had audio. We didn't have video, I think.
Ah,
you're fine with me. I can see you fine.
So, do you remember your bottle of Weller? Was it really something you long for now?
I wish I was not so cavalier about drinking it so quickly. I really had no idea. If I'd known that I'd never be able to get one again, maybe I would have savored it a little bit more.
Well, see, what I got out of the story is, first you got married, and then you started drinking.
Yeah, there you go.
No. Well, maybe.
How did you get from there to first cut?
So I got really into the online whiskey community, and it was a lot of started barrel picks, right? People, especially groups, were picking individual barrels, and whiskey was new to me, but barrel picks was really new. I had no idea what this was, and I started learning more and more, and I learned that every barrel is like a fingerprint, and you can never really exactly replicate any one single barrel. You could come close, but never exactly. And what you buy in the store from these big brands they're looking for consistent product with consistent taste. But what you give up in that is those really fun, crazy, funky, unique barrels that don't fit that particular taste. And that's what I'd noticed. A lot of these barrel picks were like the black sheep. And people were getting really excited about them. And I started buying them. I started trying them. I was like, wow, this is really cool. I mean, some of them were pretty bad. Others were incredible. And you couldn't, it wasn't like, oh, this brand always was good. And this brand, it came down to the individual barrel and the people picking it. And I fell in love with this whole thing, with the community, with the camaraderie, with the hunt for the barrels, the whole thing. This was like a whole world that I didn't even know existed. And I just, something about it I loved. And so I started getting involved with a bunch of whiskey groups, and everybody was so great and nice. And I'm Jewish. I grew up in a somewhat religious house, and I noticed as I was doing this whole whiskey thing, a lot of these names were Jewish names, like a lot of Goldsteins and Schwartzes and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, it would be funny to like start like a Jewish kind of funny themed group. I didn't exactly know what I was going to do with it, but I just thought it would be kind of a funny thing. I actually didn't even know if anybody would join. So I called it Jews and Booze. I thought that was kind of a funny little thing. And it just exploded. It started off with a whiskey advent calendar for Hanukkah. I called it 8 Whiskey Nights of Hanukkah.
Good idea.
Yeah, after that, it just exploded. And then we started doing barrel picks. We started supporting lots of different charities. And it's just been unbelievable. So we started Jews and Booze in November of 2020.
That was a club.
Oh, yes. Jews and Booze. It's basically an online club.
Got it. Okay.
But I formed it in November of 2020. And it just exploded. Now we've got over 1,300 members. We've done 61 barrel picks. We've raised many, many thousands of dollars for charity. We've done all these different events like Kiddush Fest, and the way the Genesis worked, it's kind of interesting that barrel picks, really, you were picking a brand's barrels from their barrels. And the way it worked is it would still be their label, their branding, but a lot of the groups would take a little creative license in adding wax or like a fun sticker or something like that. And it was part of the whole package, you know? And so I was doing that. And then what I quickly learned was that the whiskey from a lot of these brands is the same. I mean, they're all, I mean, 80% of the brands are from MGP. And so they're all picking from the same barrels. The only thing that's making them different is the branding and marketing and maybe the palate of the person picking the barrels. But, you know, basically everyone's picking from the same barrels. Yeah. So I was like, well, I'm working so hard and I'm doing all these Jews and Booze barrels. Why don't I try and find somebody who would do a Jews and Booze branded bottle? And so I found a distillery who was willing to work with me. And so we started putting out Jews and Booze branded barrels. So all the branding, TTB approved, all good. And I think most of them were MGP. There was, I think, one or two rums in there, but mostly MGP whiskey. They did very well. Everybody was so excited about it. It went great. And from that, my brother works in commercial real estate. By the way, he just arrived, so maybe he's going to pop on screen. But my brother, he saw all this going on. And you know, it's very exciting, very unexpected. I mean, who would have thought in a million years? Like, you know, I work in healthcare, in public health. My brother works in real estate. I mean, nothing to do with the whiskey industry. But we knew that we were having a great time, and we knew that there was this huge excitement and interest around what we were doing. And this white-labeled custom brand opportunity, without having to make a huge investment in infrastructure, was something that just was awesome for me and Jews and Booze. And so my brother and I were talking, and we're like, wow, what if we could offer this opportunity to anybody? You don't need to be connected in the industry. You don't need to jump through all the hoops and learn all the lessons I had to learn along the way. We could set you up totally from scratch, from start to finish, to have your own custom product. And you don't have to invest all the crazy infrastructure in actually starting a distillery. You could almost prove your concept with minimal risk, minimal investment. And the truth is, for individual people and enthusiasts, like a lot of the people I've become friends with through this whole thing, they love this idea of having their own barrel. I mean, and so this came out of a lot of conversations like that. One of the cool things, the new fill in particular, came out of, I was talking to some people, and they were having, you know, a lot of my friends were having babies, and they were thinking, this is my brother Dan.
Hey, Dan.
So a lot of my friends were having babies, and we thought, wow, what if you could fill a brand, you know, with Blantons? Everybody looks for the date of their kid's birth, right?
Yeah.
What if you could fill a brand new barrel on the day your kid is born or around that day, and then bottle half of it at the kid's bar bat mitzvah and the other half when they get married? And I was like, wow,
what a
cool concept. What an amazing gift. And you know, unless you are like well connected or know somebody, you know, that's not really an option for basically anybody.
Right.
And so we were trying to play with this idea and how do we make single barrels and barrel picks and this really fun, incredible opportunity. How do we make it accessible to everybody? And that's out of that came First Cut.
Well, before we go too far, we really need to drink some whiskey.
I'm thirsty. I'm thirsty.
You suggested that we try the, you sent us three different offerings. The first one is a rye from Indiana, Indiana rye. So it's MGP, I assume.
Yes. 119.96.
So we're almost at 60%. That's a whiskey with a, almost a six. 2015.
It's 0.04 off.
From 0.04 off. Just like you.
And this is a 95% rye, 5% barley.
One of the things that you see, like you guys know, but brands on the stores, there's a lot of like hiding. Like there's not full transparency, I want to say. And what I've found through this whole Juice and Boost thing is that transparency sells barrels. I mean, even if you don't think it's good, people want to know the details. That's half of the fun. Even if you don't like it, just knowing that you tried it and found out that you didn't like it, and now you could compare it to other things. I mean, that's all the fun.
A little clink clink before we go on here. Cheers, all.
Cheers, boys.
Lime.
Well, fine.
There you go.
I rushed ahead. Shame on me.
Ah, well, we expected no more from you.
No class.
Or is it no less? Which one is it?
No less.
How old is this aged for?
So this is actually still in. So these barrels are, we have them here. They're still available for purchase. This particular barrel was barreled in September of 2015. So this is about to turn, or just turned 8 years old.
Just 8 years. Wow.
Yeah. Everything we have to taste is available for sale. And that's kind of our concept, is that when you come in, you're going to get to try five or six different whiskeys. Mm-hmm. Any of those can be yours. We don't, once a barrel is sold to someone else, that barrel is locked up and we do not take any more juice out of that because that belongs to someone else.
So you are making the investment in a bunch of barrels without having them sold yet.
Not just barrels, but we also have a variety of different totes of actual White Dog distillate right off the still. So when we fill barrels, we could fill barrels with distillate from, you know, a variety of different distilleries that or name brands.
Now, do you give out that name of those brand of those distilleries?
When we can, definitely. MGP is a big supplier.
So how does this work with the three-tiered system? Where's the retailer part in here?
So we have partner retailers. Right now, we're really focusing on Connecticut because of, I mean, as you guys know, the three-tier system makes things very complicated, especially when crossing states, state borders. So we're really trying to focus on Connecticut and the New York City tri-state area. But we have retail partners in Connecticut, and we're working on building retail relationships with retailers around the country.
Got it.
There are retailers that we work with, like, for example, in D.C., where they're able to ship and distribute to more places than we can from inside of Connecticut.
So a club comes to you, picks a barrel, you guys create it, bottle it, it goes to a retailer, and then that group purchases it from the retailer or whoever wants to purchase from that retailer, right?
Exactly.
Oh, okay. So you use, so the retailer is sort of like the middleman?
Correct.
By law.
So in the state of Connecticut, as long as we sell underneath a certain amount of proof gallons, which it would be the equivalent of a few, you know, $15 million of whiskey, which, you know, it'd be a lot of whiskey. we could sell unlimited quantities direct to retail. And retailers in the state of Connecticut can sell unlimited quantities to a consumer. So therefore, as long as we go through the retailer, pay the appropriate taxes to the state, everyone's happy.
Yeah.
Mm. Ultimately, it's all about the dollar. Yeah. As long as the government gets their money, everybody's happy.
Yeah, like what did it say? It's always about the money.
Yeah.
Yep.
Always about the money.
Well, the 95.5 is pretty famous, pretty well known. It's delicious. You know, we've had it lots of times.
That's got some heat. That's a heater.
Well, it's 60% alcohol, so that would do it.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's got some potency.
We've had it, but not maybe as consistently at that proof.
Wow. No, usually we see it at 43.
Right.
A lot of 43s at this at that formula.
So
go ahead.
So you've got barrels on site.
Yes.
Okay. And so it's really continuing to age as long as it's in that barrel.
Yep.
We actually have customers that have purchased barrels. They've bottled a portion of the barrel today.
Right.
They purchased it. And then they decided to actually continue aging the remainder of the barrel. And we closely watch that. We send them samples regularly.
Yeah, I was going to say, what about...
It doesn't get over-oaked. But they want to see how that matures.
So do you do sherry casks? Do you do wine casks? Do you do other kind of casks well?
So everything, we do whatever the client wants. If the client wants that, we do that. I'll tell you, so right now, Jews and Booze is a client of First Cut. And the not the next barrel that's coming out, but the one after that is actually, you guys will now be the first to know, it's actually a 7.5 year, 99% corn MGP bourbon that has now been sitting for 2 weeks in a cherry brandy barrel. Mm. It'll probably sit for another, I'm guessing, 4 to 6 weeks before we bottle.
That could be delicious.
Oh, man. Just popping it open now, the nose is unreal.
It's like a Manhattan. It's like an old-fashioned.
That's what I'm thinking.
It's even cooler. You know, Josh talked about a little bit how, you know, we think the story is really important of where our whiskey is coming from. We like telling that story. When Josh sells this barrel, we can tell a real story. The barrel that the cherry brandy was made in, this is actually its third life. Its first life was a Jim Beam bourbon. This was a Jim Beam barrel back in the day. Sold to the brandy distillery, who then put brandy in it, aged it in an old bourbon barrel. And now we're giving it a third life as we're a finishing barrel at 99% corn. So, like, we go back to that story. You know, I like to think of it in terms of, like, restaurants and how we have all kind of fallen in love with this farm-to-table concept. Like, you almost know the name of the cow you're eating when you get to go to a steakhouse. you know, I don't know if we'll ever get to that extent in whiskey, but... We want to tell the story behind everyone's whiskey, because if it's your own personal barrel, your own personal bottle, there's something nice about being able to tell, hey, I got the greens from here. I got the barrel was made by this cooperage, and et cetera, et cetera.
Hey, Aaron. So that's two podcasts in a row where the Portlandia, knowing where your chicken came from thing. So Portlandia is inevitable. That's all I'm saying.
We're going to do a Portlandia episode one day.
All right. Anyway, a couple episodes. Anyway, sorry. Just an aside.
While we talk TV or movie here for a second, let's switch back to the watch part of our live stream here. We somehow in our discussions by email came up with a movie to talk about, and one that I had not seen in a long time. It was near and dear to my heart when it came out in 1988, A Fish Called Wanda. And I was happy to see this one again. Any thoughts on the movie?
I think it was one of my suggestions. It was this one or Trading Places. And the common denominator in both is Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah.
and it was just, it's a fun movie. I remember when I saw it, I think I was in college. It would have been my junior year. I know the people I went with. I know the theater I saw it at. And I just remember leaving that theater and I just was laughing the whole way home. It was just such a fun movie. Such a fun movie.
I'll tell you what, the very first thing that jumped out at me was, I do not remember sexy Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, silly boy. What?
Oh, my silly God. Boy.
How old are you, Josh?
I'm 37.
Oh, wow. That's why. She was like the queen of the 80s. I mean, go back and watch Trading Places next if you haven't seen it already.
I saw it when I was a kid. I don't remember her being so sexy. I'm definitely going to have to watch it now.
She was
True Lies. That's another good movie with her.
Well, even what's the one with Pierce Brosnan? The Tailor of Panama?
Tailor of Panama, yeah.
She's great in that. Yep. I mean, you know, but anyway.
She's having this really, we're getting a little off the topic here, but she's having this really great renaissance, and she was just amazing in The Bear. If you guys see The Bear on Hulu, she had that amazing episode, the Christmas episode a few months back.
It might have been the most intense hour of television I've ever seen in my life.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I got PTSD on that one.
Yes. We love it. I've seen it 3 times. it's so good. And she is amazing. I said to my daughter, She's going to win an Emmy next year for this. Wasn't she in an Oscar nominated?
Yeah, she won the Oscar. She won the Oscar.
She won an Oscar, right, right. Yeah. Right.
Everything.
She's having a great, she's having this great second part of her career here. This is awesome. And now we're going back to like the beginnings. And what do you got on a little the back of the baseball card on the movie?
All right. So release date was July 29th, 1988. Budget, $7.5 million. Box office, $62.5 million. So not bad. Made a little bit of money. Where should I go next? Okay. IMDb score, 7.5 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, 96%.
Yeah.
Metascore, 80. So it is directed by Charles Crichton with a little sub credit to John Cleese. And the writers were John Cleese and Charles Crichton.
And so I read something about this, and they said that Cleese said, "I had nothing to do with directing this movie." They said they were deathly afraid that the 78-year-old that they had brought in to be the director would not make it through the movie.
Right.
So they said insurance reasons, I had to sign on as the co-director or whatever. Said,
"Oh, that's funny.
I don't know how to direct. It wasn't me at all. Everything was him, not me."
It feels Python-esque in a lot of ways. Yeah, and it's right. I remember thinking, my friends and I were all Python folks, and seeing these guys out of the Python world and into like regular movies was really fascinating.
Yeah.
And did they translate well to regular movies? And it's got Python elements to it, yet it's just a regular movie in a lot of ways. I mean, it's a heist movie, right? He is so good. Cleese as an actor, comedic actor. He is so great.
And I think there were some Fawlty Towers elements to it too, where
totally, yes.
Bubbling. Almost every time he turned a corner, something was going to happen or didn't happen. And you see him yelling and he's surprised or scared at some point. And everyone catches him like, "What is wrong with you?" Like, that's so Fawlty Towers at that point.
Yeah, yeah. The film follows a gang of diamond thieves who double cross one another to find stolen diamonds hidden by the gang leader. And a barrister, who's John Cleese, becomes a central figure as femme fatale Wanda, who is Jamie Lee Curtis, uses him to locate the loot. It's a pretty simple concept.
Yeah, yet absolutely. It's
definitely a farce and a with crazy heist with so much comedy in it. And don't forget, we have Michael Palin, who is...
Yep. He's no slouch in this either.
He's no slouch in this either. And these guys are all pushing... Well, those guys are pushing 80... And Jamie Lee Curtis now is what,
she's 64, I think. She's 60, like early to mid 60s.
I totally forgot how funny
Kevin Kline. Yeah, Kevin Kline was great.
I couldn't, because I can't remember a lot of other Kevin Kline films. I mean, there's a few, but he was so good in this. He was just like this rock star.
One of the things that I think you find a lot with the stuff that the Python guys work with is their use of language. And it carries through the whole movie. Like even the original bad guy, George, his name is George Thompson in it. His real name is Tom Georgeson. Like Cleese just like, "I'm just going to reverse your name because it's just so English that you're named like Tom and George. We're just going to keep using those names over again."
Yes. And that's very, very Python-esque.
And the repetitive shtick with Michael Palin with the stutter.
Yes.
Where, you know, the people that know him are like, "Okay, well, I know where you're forming a word. It's going to be this. Is it this? Is it this?" Where if someone actually has to stutter, you would never do that. But for this, they're like,
correct.
"We got to speed this up. Come on."
And only one time did somebody figure out, Kevin Kline, "You could write this down."
Yeah.
Right. You could actually put it on paper.
Well, that was John Cleese right at the end.
Cleese, yes. It has such a great flow to the movie. It could be a movie that just has these dead spots to it, you know, but it keeps going. It just has you going the whole time.
Yeah.
Well, it's only an hour and 40 minutes. It's not long.
It's tightly done. And the scenes are great. Individually, the scenes are great. And the chemistry between all these characters is so good. Even some of the ancillary characters. The wife, John Cleese's wife.
Oh, she's fantastic.
She is fantastic.
She was so funny.
I don't know who she is. I don't know what she did after that or before that.
Her name is Maria Aitken. She looks familiar, though.
She does look familiar, yeah.
She looks familiar. She's just really good. You know what I really like with her? Just since you brought her up, when, you know, Kevin Kline's doing the whole thing that is with the CIA and they got the KGB agent,
right.
And he makes up the name, and then she repeats the name, like, perfectly to the letter. Manfred Jensen, something or whatever. It was
so Listen, Mr. Yes. Oh, she was that was great.
My father was in the Secret Service. Blah, 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 blah.
You would not be telling people this.
No. Josh, thoughts on the movie?
I mean, the part where Klein, what's his name? The guy with the stutter catches them in the bedroom.
Yes.
And then he runs out and pretends he's gay.
Yeah.
I thought that I was blown away. I thought that was genius. It was so funny. Yeah. And who would think of something like that? It was awesome.
Otto.
I love the sad killing of three small dogs.
Yeah.
Trying to kill off that woman. Oh my God. So funny.
And it's the animal lover that's doing it. Each time he's crying a little bit more that he's killed another dog.
And at the end, he's just dying a little bit each time that one of the fish is swallowed. Yep. And he's just, it's killing him. And then he finally goes off the deep end at the end there. It is such a funny movie. I recall, because my friends and I were very into Monty Python, that we had, and there had already been Python movies, right? So we'd already gotten to see the Pythons on this big screen in these crazy Life of Brian. They were just these larger than life characters that are on these little tiny PBS channel. we were watching stuff from them late night. And then it's, oh my God, they're there. And then all of a sudden you have this is like a real movie with Hollywood produced this thing.
Yeah.
This is crazy. And Cleese was always my favorite. And he was like Alan Alda, right? He's like the lead.
The British Alan Alda. That's a good comparison.
He's totally. He was the leader of this band of crazy people. And he was the smart, it appeared to be the smarter of all of them, right? And all those guys were all
But they're all Oxford educated. And Cambridge and all the other
Oxford, Cambridge,
well-educated guys, right? And it comes out in their language and their humor, and they could have all been National Lampoon guys who went on Saturday Night Live, right? So, yeah, it just was great seeing them transition to Hollywood. Okay, we'll take a little pause here. Again, we're What We Watch When We Drink, the Booze Dancing Entertainment Network. We are with Josh Mann from First Cut Barrel Company. Josh is in Stamford, Connecticut at his location at the, do you call it the distillery? Because you're not actually distilling anything. Do you just call it your offices or?
Well, so we still have to have the same distillery license.
Your distillery.
Is that because you're storing barrels?
Yeah, so we have to have a legal bonded warehouse. We have to have a rectifier's license. So we can't actually distill spirits, but basically everything else we can do, and it's just a different class of the same license.
Got it. Okay.
And distillery is a lot sexier than rectifier.
Yes. Rectifier doesn't sound very nice.
It sounds like you're bringing people back from the dead. I don't know if I want
to. Pretty much. Which is a different podcast. So I had a few questions.
Lazarus Pod.
That's right. The Lazarus Pod. That's good. We can do that one. I had a couple other questions that came up from earlier we spoke. So your clientele, is it primarily individuals or is it primarily groups?
Up until now, it's been primarily individuals. Individuals and corporate clients. Like our very first bottling was an investment firm in Manhattan.
I was going to say that will be a perfect client being where you are.
Totally. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it was their 10th anniversary. We did a really special 10-year rye that was 51% rye, 49% malted barley. I mean, it was delicious. 10 years old, and they loved it. It was a huge hit. And from there, we haven't spent any money on marketing. Kiddish Fest is literally the only marketing we've done.
Really?
So all of our businesses come from word of mouth.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine if you close the deal, if you were having a work anniversary, if you're doing something else, that'd be a great gift for the employees. Be like, here, totally. Everybody have a bottle.
So whiskey is the new Rolex watch?
Pretty much, yeah.
A lot cheaper, I guess, right? Get rid of the Rolex watch.
Right. Yeah.
Depends on which whiskey you're drinking, I guess.
That's true.
So these are, we've been talking mostly American whiskeys. Have you done non-American whiskeys? Anything? Yep.
We just went through, we just sold, one of them is going to Jews and Booze, but the other two are going to other people. A Canadian whiskey, 23 years old. We're working on we've got a Barrels of Irish whiskey coming soon. And I mean, this is from the U.S., but we just got a bunch of barrels of American single malt. Ages between 5 and 7 years. That is really something special.
Can you say from where?
The single malts are from MGP.
So what's the process that you have with distilleries? They send you samples from barrels and then you're picking a sample, or you're actually asking for a specific recipe?
It really depends on the distillery. Some of the bigger ones, they're not going to give you samples of specific barrels, only because if they're sending them out to 20 people, by the time I try the sample, it might already be gone.
So
what they give you is sort of representative samples. A lot of them have a minimum barrel buy. So if you get a representative sample and you're getting 4 barrels, you could expect, you know, the 4 barrels are going to approximate something around that. Right. Some of the smaller producers will allow us to actually taste barrels. Obviously, we can't know how many bottles are in the barrel because, you know, it's still in the barrel. So some of them will even weigh the barrel so that we have a little formula that we can estimate how many bottles are going to come out. But again, it really comes down to the distillery, because for a huge distillery, that it doesn't pay for them to start weighing individual barrels for a little nobody like us, you know?
Yep.
And everything's coming out of cask strength?
Depends on what the client wants. So far, all the clients have wanted cask strength, but we're happy to proof it down if people want.
And that would give you more bottles. So if somebody wanted more bottles, they'd proof it down, right?
Yeah. Or blend barrels if they want.
Yeah. So have you been doing any kind of blending there on premises?
Yep. We could do everything on premises. We actually have a great setup. We're not open to the public. We're only open by appointment. So everything here is set up for personal private appointments. So we have a whole, basically it looks like a lab set up when people could come with their friends, a retirement party, birthday party, something like that. And we set up a whole thing for you guys to actually blend different things, see different amounts. And when you come up with a blend you like, we could actually put it together for you.
That's cool. So the next whiskey you suggested we drink is the straight bourbon, Kentucky bourbon, 53% corn, 104 proof, looks like.
Yep, right? Just over 104. I think this one's really special. It's from a Lexington distillery in Kentucky. I like to think of this one as a Scotch drinker's bourbon, mostly because of the high malted barley content. I feel like rarely do we see a bourbon with so much malted barley in it. And I think Scotch, it's much more approachable for a Scotch drinker, I think.
I think that's one of the things you notice on the nose. It's a little grainier than you typically get out of a bourbon. You're getting all that extra barley coming in. Yeah. And how old is this?
This was barreled in September of 2016. So just turned 7.
16, so it's 7. Wow.
Now, this is still in a barrel, what you gave us? This is
again?
You poured this off of a barrel that you have in your warehouse?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Wow. That's really good.
This is my brother's favorite barrel that we have right now.
Is your brother a Scotch guy?
I would typically gravitate to ryes and bourbons, whereas he's more open, I would say.
That is good.
That actually seems hotter than the rye.
I like high barley bourbons as well. There aren't a lot, like you said, but they just mellow things out for me. I like them.
Oh, I don't. This isn't as hot. No, the rye was hotter, I thought. This is a lot smoother. This is like silky.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah, that's what it does. That's that. I think the barley does that, and like wheat will do the same thing.
Yeah, it'll soften it up a little bit.
Yep.
I don't mean the spice of it. I mean the finish. It feels like there's more of a finish with this.
Oh, okay.
So if we wanted to buy 10 bottles, could we buy 10 bottles? Do we got to buy a whole barrel? Like, what are you doing in terms of sending it out?
Yeah, what's your minimum?
So right now we're only set up to do full barrels. in certain situations where we know the other half of a barrel, like if two groups wanted to split a barrel, we could do that, or two individuals or whatever, but we're really only set up for full barrels. Already aged barrels almost always are coming in 53-gallon barrels. 53-gallon barrel, you can imagine you're getting anywhere from 180 to 220 bottles, which is more than most people need.
Right.
So for our new filled barrels, what we're doing is we have other sizes of barrels. So we also have 15-gallon and 30-gallon barrels. Much more reasonable, a 15-gallon barrel, you're probably the maximum you're letting that age is 2 years. After 2 years of aging, you're probably looking at 65 to 70 bottles, which is a much more reasonable number and not a crazy wait time.
So, Josh, my group calls you up today and says, hey, we want to buy this barrel. We loved it. We loved the sample. It was great. When can I have bottles? What's the turnaround process and time?
It's really quick. There's basically two limiting factors. One, first is the label design. So the client, it's their label. They design it however they want, as long as it fits the rules of the TTB. It's their design. So however long it takes them to design it and get the proof to us, that's the first piece. The second piece is submitting it to the TTB. And we know the government always gets everything done right away. So whenever they get around to it, yeah. So those are basically the two limiting factors. Other than that, the turnaround is extremely quick.
And then the other issue would be if we were calling from a different state to make sure that we could get you a local, you know, retailer to go and work with you to go and send it to them so we could pick it up from them.
Right.
So if we're not in Connecticut or we're not in DC, we'd have to find someone else that could work with you, right?
So the client could order the whiskey from you, but you still have to go to the retailer to get the bottles to the client.
Correct. And taxes to be paid.
And when you said that you were like limited in terms of like, you know, five, like you couldn't do 10 bottles because then like you're kind of now you're like a retailer and that's not part of your license, I guess. Is that where the problem is? Or is it just that you give off five, then what am I going to do with the rest?
Yeah,
that's the problem. Then it's no longer an exclusive product because the next person in line has the same bottles.
I got you. Yes. I got you. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So on the bottle labeling part, do you provide a template for customers so that they, if they're really designing themselves to follow all the TTB rules, or are you helping them in the process of designing? Because most people don't, there's a lot of specific rules with labeling.
Right. So I would say both. First, online, the TTB has a really helpful kind of online tool to help you design the label. It basically dissects every piece of the label. Yeah. So that's first. And second of all, although I'll be the first to admit I'm not a professional designer, but we will work together with the clients to put together something that they like.
Right. You've done it before. So use your expertise, you know, what you're going to put together. It makes sense.
Right.
Now, in terms of the bottle itself, are they a particular shape that you happen to sell to them, or can you get any shape bottle if somebody wanted? And are they only 750s?
Any shape, any size, as long as it's legal. So like we can't do some random, you know, we could actually also do any custom work too. But obviously custom work, we have to charge extra for.
Sure.
There's probably going to be a minimum, but other than custom work, we could basically get any bottle size, shape, style you're looking for.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So you literally could customize this just as customizable as somebody wanted. You know,
literally every aspect. You could custom. You could decide the entry proof into the barrel. I mean, every aspect of this is totally up to the client.
Nice.
Double back to the movie for a minute, gents. Did you guys have any other thoughts on it?
And like you said, you've done all the legwork in terms of the label and the TTB and the taxes and who pays what. How it goes from place to place.
What happened to the movie?
Mike just forgot. He forgot that we're talking about.
He just had a senior moment.
Yeah, senior moment. So any other thoughts on A Fish Called Wanda from 1988?
It's just really funny. There's some random facts that they had on the IMDb site for trivia.
What are those facts?
There's some interesting ones. So apparently Michael Palin's father stuttered. So Palin used a lot of his real life. I'm just reading it. Used a lot of his real life experience when playing Ken Pyle, including the fact that Ken's stutter is less pronounced around people he trusts, George and Wanda, for instance, and worse around people with whom he is uncomfortable, Otto.
Wow. That's a good factoid.
And there was another one that came up. They also said that Michael Palin founded the London Center for Stammering Children after a group of stutterers confronted him regarding the sensitivity with which he dealt with Ken Pyle's handicap in the movie.
I wondered about that. I think we lost Mike. He was having, I think, some connection problems there.
I think so.
So that's interesting, too, because you and I talked off the air about the political correctness now of some of the
yeah,
movie.
But see, I didn't get the impression that Michael Palin was, like, you know, making fun of stutterers at any point. If anything, it was just Otto.
I don't disagree with you, but I could see
right
groups today would be concerned.
I don't think there's any way this movie gets made in 2023.
Yeah, there's a few things that I think will probably be a problem.
Yes, correct. A few things, yeah. No. Well, we look at a lot of older movies, Josh, and we say that a lot. We say that quite often, that there's no way this happens today, this movie. It would be very different. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
Which is sad, because I think it's so great. There's no reason. This movie should be re-released today and in wide release, and it would still, I think, sell well. Political correctness or not.
Okay, let's say like something like The Boys, right?
Yeah.
There's so much insane stuff on The Boys that this pales in comparison to that.
You are right. There is so much stuff out there that is so much farther off the rails that people should be upset about or could be upset about versus Michael Palin stuttering in 40 years ago, right? 35 years ago.
So, I mean, he was convincing, yeah. I thought he was incredibly convincing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just for the sake of a stutter. It like really added to the movie, to the, you know, to the script. And
yes,
you know, it wasn't gratuitously just added, you know?
No. And I can't remember. I think it's in Life of Brian. I think he has a character that he stutters a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
He was like the emperor at the end, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Cause it was the whole thing with, you have something to say about my friend, Biggest Dickus. It was something like that.
Yes, I think you're right. Yeah. It's a good thing that he does. It's a part of his little bag of tricks.
And you know, apparently he grew up with it. So I guess, you know, he has the sense for it.
What else did you have? Any other little factoids in there?
Archie Leach's daughter, Portia, is actually John Cleese's real daughter.
Really?
Cynthia Cleese.
Well, and Archie Leach, the name?
Oh, yeah. So Archie Leach, okay, actor, executive producer, and writer John Cleese chose the name Archie Leach, Cary Grant's real name, because he was born 20 miles away from where Grant was born, and because it was the closest Cleese could get to being Cary Grant, because he was a huge Cary Grant fan. And rightfully so, because Cary Grant's pretty awesome. So
yes,
the guy was pretty
That's
great.
That's a good one, too. I didn't realize that was his daughter.
There were a lot of little facts. There were a whole lot of little ones. What was this one here? So yeah, that was a bunch. I tried to pick and choose. Jamie Lee Curtis was listed as Jamie Lee Schwartz on all the call sheets because John Cleese found it amusing that her father's real name was Bernard Schwartz and her dad is Tony Curtis.
That's right. Yep.
So, what else we got here? There was a few others. The fish that Kevin Klein ate were made out of Jell-O. Klein claims that he offered to eat live fish. But the filmmaker,
of course, he did.
But they wouldn't let him.
He's a method actor.
he was pretty funny. All the stuff, just him talking Italian and just reciting recipes.
Oh, the Italian was hilarious. No,
just random Italian things. So
mozzarella.
And Cleese going into Italian and saying it's a just dirty language, and then it just goes into Russian. And oh my God, it's so funny. Oh.
Oh, there was a thing actually when Archie Leach was speaking in Italian, and he was saying they had the translation, and the translation was "But I married a woman who prefers working in the garden to making passionate love, a big mistake." He was talking about his wife, right? So it was pretty funny. The wife I thought was great. She was fantastic.
She was
so good. Oh, honey, I won my case. No one listens to it. She's just going off about all the nonsense she's dealing with.
Even the actor who plays George, Tom
Yeah, Norton's. I don't
know. He was very good too.
Yeah, I don't remember I've seen him before.
I don't either. But he was a good, darker, you know, bad guy kind of guy, and he was good. It was good to see London and strolling around the streets of London and going crazy everywhere, and that was very funny.
I like that apartment with the view of London Bridge, of Tower Bridge.
Oh my God,
that was cool. Yeah. Right?
Oh, and when the other family comes home. Oh my God!
Funny. Oh, you so bought funny. Our house.
Oh yeah.
Oh hey, how you doing?
It's a little bit madcap at times, right?
Oh, totally.
And then it kind of devolves into a little bit of romantic comedy, and
yep.
And the chemistry between Jamie Lee Curtis and all of the men in the movie are great. And she is just so sexy. She's so good. And she's a really great actress.
Yeah, she was only like 29 when that came out.
She was 29. Wow.
Which means she was probably like, what, 25 when Trading Places came out?
So Trading Places is her not really first. Well, what's before that for her?
I don't know. She did Halloween too, right? It was all around
Halloween.
That
time. Was that before?
I don't know. Before, I don't
remember. Yeah, I think Halloween was before that.
And I think I heard that she's doing another one, the last one.
Yeah. Did they finally kill Michael Myers or whatever it is? Hey, you know, it's a paycheck.
Not as long as you keep making money.
I was looking up. She's been married to Christopher Guest for like decades.
Yep, mm-hmm. Correct.
And she was married to him before this came out because it was right around the time Spinal Tap came out. And it looks like Kevin Kline still married to Phoebe Cates.
What?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, she's like 60. I think.
That's crazy.
What happened?
Where'd Mike we go? Lost Mike again.
Did I do that? I'm sorry, Mike. It was an accident.
All the time with you.
What? No, I could do it again.
I think the biggest shocking news is Kevin Kline is still married to Phoebe Cates. I had no idea.
Pretty wild. Meanwhile, John Cleese has been married, what, like 5 times?
Yeah. Right.
He's been married like a bunch of times. It's just kind of funny.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he like, I think he still lives in Santa Barbara, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. I think it says a lot about Jamie Lee Curtis that she's been married to Christopher Guest, because Christopher Guest is a pretty funny guy.
Oh my God.
He's a pretty funny guy. And she's very funny.
He's the fifth Baron, you know. He's the fifth Baron, Christopher Guest.
What do you mean the fifth Baron?
He's actually English royalty.
Really?
What?
He's the fifth Baron, like Hayden Guest or something like that. He was a life peer till they removed the life peers.
Interesting.
Wow. Crazy.
And I mean, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis is sort of Hollywood royalty, right? Janet Leigh and Tony Curtis's daughter.
Well, what was really funny with her during the last award season, she kept introducing herself as a Nepo baby. I'm a Nepo baby. You're like, all right, you're in your.
She's like, she is.
But yes. Now you're like, all right, I think maybe you earned it. I think it's
okay. She's earned it by now. You know, Halloween, maybe she didn't.
I'm a Nepo baby.
Yeah. I think we could forgive her after Trading Places.
Oh, absolutely. She was so good in that. She was great.
Well, we got one last whiskey here that Josh and Long. This is a MGP straight bourbon, 109.7 on the Richter scale.
This is one of the MGP's cool mash bills. It's I call it their low rye bourbon mash bill. It's the 21% rye. This one, I think it's pretty good. It's May 2015. This was barreled. So this is a little over 8 years.
Right. This is, you said it's a bourbon?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, sorry. I gotta get the glasses out. I can't read it. I got to get the glasses out.
It's still pretty spicy, though, for their low rye. That's nice.
So low rye to MGP can even be considered a high rye to a lot of other
places. Yeah, for somebody else, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, okay. See, I was reading it, and I couldn't tell, and I got a little confused. I didn't see the little percentage. For a second there, I thought it said 75% corn, 21% rye, 40% barley. I'm like, hang on a second. We're over 100%. Okay. Never mind. Hence the glasses.
I think I like the Kentucky one a little bit better. I think I like the barley in there.
I like that.
Very different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of rounds it out for me a little bit more. Yeah. So that's still nice though.
I like the spice though. I just like that little kick of rye.
By the way, the one that you like, the Lexington one, is the youngest of the three.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show you, like, it's not all about age.
Nope.
No, which is great. I mean, that's, you know, like with all the all the scotches with the no age statement whiskeys and all that. Yeah. It doesn't really matter. Is it good? That's it.
How did you educate yourself on all this? On the actual, the techiness of it, of the whiskey making process and all that there is to it?
It's been an adventure. First of all, a lot of whiskey drinking. That's definitely the start.
That's how we are in the position we are in.
Yes. Figuring out what I like, tasting different things. Really the greatest variety that I've been able to get my hands on and tasting it and figuring out, this flavor, this profile is coming from this grain or this type of char barrel, whatever. So that was a big part of it. And I've also been very lucky, through the Juice and Booze thing and just through this whole process, I've been very lucky to have, I told you, I've met some of the most amazing people I've ever met in my life through this whole thing. I feel very, very blessed. And those people have been very, I feel the people in the whiskey industry are extremely, extremely generous. Not necessarily with money, with their time, with their expertise and with their camaraderie. There's been so many people that have helped us along the way, from people like Ari Sussman is the head distiller at the Mammoth Distilling in Michigan. He's been involved in a bunch of products. He's been a mentor to us. Dave Schmier, Redemption Whiskey and Proof and Wood. I mean, he's been a mentor. Joshua Hatton, Single Cast Nation. He's been a mentor. We've been able to just draw from these friendships that we've developed. They've become like mentors, and I know that I've got a bunch of people whenever anything comes up, I have a bunch of people that I could call and ask for help, advice, insight. I mean, even just this morning, we had a guy from, I don't know if you know him, Brandon Collins from Kings County Distillery. He was here and he was working with us on optimizing our process because we're always looking to improve. And it's all about connections. It's all about the people you meet and friendships. And we've been very, very lucky.
I think we've seen that over the years. We've been kind of in this world about 10, 12 years ourselves, and we see that all the time. We see the collaborativeness of the community. You mentioned Hatton, and Joshua and Jason have started like you. They didn't know what they were doing, right? They have this interesting part of the segment as well, and they've forged all these relationships really over glasses of whiskey over the years. It really speaks to the whole industry. It's just a lot of good people.
And it's not just the industry. I mean, I guess everyone's industry, but it's people who are, influencers or doing these Instagram accounts or whatever, people doing podcasts like you guys. I mean, I've become so close with Maggie Kimbrell is an amazing, yeah, amazing journalist. I mean, yep, people like that, I've been so blessed to be able to call them friends.
And we've got so many friends that we've developed over the years from going to whiskey shows and our podcast and our blog. Angelo and I met on Twitter, right?
This is true.
How long ago? 12 years ago, something like that?
Whenever the second Jubilee was.
Yeah, right before Whiskey that. Jubilee.
Elon Musk, if you're watching, you're the guys you got to talk to.
Well, he swiped right. Is that what happened? He swiped right? Is that how you met?
Of course I did. Come on, look it up. He's a match.
He's a match. Right.
He's a catch.
It's funny how this community wrapped around this brown spirit is really grown, and it's really literally organic.
Hey, by the way, it helps that these are all excuses to drink more.
Yes.
And it's always fun to drink with people. So
if this was candy, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Well, yeah, we might. I don't know. I think we could bond over with Sour Patch Kids.
Candydancing.com. Can we have that website?
Why not? Listen, I'll tell you what. Nobody ever leaves here. I've been, I work in healthcare. I work for, my full-time job is for a rare cancer nonprofit. So, my job is not always so all smiles and happiness. And my brother works in real estate. And obviously commercial real estate lately is, not the best industry to be in. And
yeah.
And yet not a single person ever leaves here without a smile on their face.
I was going to say sober, but
Well, sometimes it's a crooked smile, but yeah, a smile nonetheless.
I know it's really early in your company's lifespan here. Do you have other thoughts, goals, where this company can go?
First of all, like we said in the beginning, I mean, we're really focusing on Connecticut and the tri-state area right now, but we see a lot of opportunity in every major metropolitan area where there is a whiskey community, where there's people who are interested in this whole thing. So we see eventually, you know, outposts of First Cut in a bunch of different major cities. And another thing that potentially we could see in the future is moving beyond just whiskey. You know, there's other communities built around spirits. The one that comes to mind right away is tequila and brandy. With our license and what we're doing with the, I mean, really we're focusing on the barrel aging and the barrel filling and the barrel aspect. We could do any barrel aged spirit. And so there's a lot of room to try new things and expand into different opportunities. I mean, right now we're really trying to focus on Connecticut, tri-state area, and whiskey.
What's the third state, the tri-state area? Is it New Jersey?
Yeah, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut.
Okay.
Although I live in Boston, so, you know, anybody who's in Massachusetts, we'd love to have you come down. Okay.
One thing I would add to that, to what Josh said, is that, you know, my background from college is in hospitality. And it's all about the experience. And what we're trying to create here is more than just a product. You know, in fact, I would say what our focus is not actually the product. It's coming together with groups of friends and family and individuals and companies to create something that's memorable as an experience. We believe that the tasting room is just as important as the end product itself. And that's why bringing First Cut to other major metropolitan areas to make it more accessible to our clientele is a big goal of ours. So, you know, yeah, you know, I think having these outposts at every metropolitan area where, you know, it is a luxury product. This is not toothbrushes and Band-Aids, but every metropolitan area where there are is a population that would have can afford it and can appreciate it. We think we need to be there.
You know, we always talk about where this little world is a niche within a niche, right? Whiskey is a niche within a niche. And when you get into the cask strength stuff, when you get into barrel picks, you're talking super niche. And what you guys are doing is super, super niche. But there is a market for all of that because there's niches within the population who are looking for this kind of thing, I think. You got a leg up on a lot of people on this. I think it's a really unique and fun product that I think you're right, Dan. You are selling a unique experience. We were really happy to meet you guys at Kiddush Fest because it was a little hard to figure out what you guys do. And now talking to you guys, it totally makes sense. This has been really an enlightening, eye-opening evening. We can't thank you enough for coming on. And thank you for the samples. These are really beautiful whiskeys. And whoever buys these barrels are going to be very, very happy customers, I think, whenever they buy them.
And Mike and I are going to run some spreadsheets and, you know, finish up the rest of this stuff and, you know, do the math and figure out what's going on with this. You know, we'll sign up for the franchise.
Nice. Yeah. The New Jersey franchise. Yeah.
The best part about whiskey is getting to share it with people like you guys. So thank you guys so much for allowing us to
thank you.
Whiskey with thank you. You. And hopefully when you guys are ready, you'll come and actually come here in person. And like we said,
that'll be fun.
This is an experience company. So we want you to come and actually pull the bong out of the barrel yourself. Put the thief right into the barrel and pull the whiskey out yourself. It's all a big part of the experience. And so we want you guys, this is our invitation. You guys come down here and we're going to have a great time.
Hey, Mike, when's the next meeting you got a meeting in Connecticut, don't you?
Yeah, I go to Stanford every May. So maybe I'll have to not go to the client event and just duck out, go over there.
We can coordinate this. I got a friend that lives in the next town over. So, yeah. You know.
My daughter's in school in Massachusetts, so I'll have to kind of coordinate. So there's nothing better than walking into a large room with a lot of barrels of whiskey.
Yeah.
The smell of it is the best. There's nothing greater. It is the best. What do you guys call your space?
We'd be calling it a barrel room, but it's basically, I don't know, what, 30-foot high ceilings? Yeah. It's basically a giant warehouse, but we call it a barrel room.
And we have the ability to grow to about 35,000 square feet. So we're in a small fraction of that today. I don't need to overextend myself in real estate. But when we're ready, We're going to knock down some walls. We're going to go vertical. We got a whole nother floor above us that we can go. And we have optionality to do it. So
Wow. That's great.
That's great.
That's nice. Great. You guys are ready for growth. That's awesome. That's awesome. We have been with Josh and Dan Mann from the First Cut Barrel Company in Stamford, Connecticut. And tonight we watched A Fish Called Wanda, a movie we all love. And we drank some beautiful whiskeys from these guys. If you're out there and you've got a club or organization that is looking for your own special barrel, you got to get on the horn right now. Get on the website. I assume you can contact you guys on the website. Yep. And place your order, right?
Yep.
That's awesome. I'm guessing it's a pretty easy process. You guys are the CarMax of whiskey, right?
One day. I don't know if we're that easy yet.
But we definitely want to roll out the red carpet for our clients and make sure that every piece of the experience feels personal, exclusive, and most of all, fun.
That's great. That's great. Guys, thank you for coming on the show on boozedancing.com. This will be on a podcast soon. You can just be able to download it and listen whenever you want. A couple weeks it'll be out. And we just thank you guys for coming on today. This is great.
Good luck with the company.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Have a great Saturday night. Don't go anywhere. Ange?
Play us off.
Play us off? All right. Let me find where. Ah, here we go. I found them. All right. Cheers, boys.
Cheers. Cheers.
If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.